What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the You Know Ball podcast. I am your host, Trill Bro Dude, and what a week it has been in this Sixers and Celtics series. There has been a lot of back and forth. We're going to talk about all of it today. We're going to talk about this Game 7 that we are now facing somehow in this series that Sam has described as a mid-off. But before we get into any of that, I need to pull up some stuff that we have going on with Underdog Fantasy right now. There's actually a lot of cool shit that they're doing right now over at Underdog. Specifically, I don't know if you saw this promotion, Sam, that they're doing. But they're giving away $5,000 for Underdog people that sign up. The link is in the description for the tweet. All you have to do is quote tweet this tweet. And every time Jason Tatum misses a first quarter shot in the next game, they will be giving away $5,000 to Underdog subscribers. So if you're on Underdog, if you're not already, $100 promo code for us is promo code SLOP. And you can go on there today. You can do their pick 'em. You can do the fantasy drafts. But the other night, it was every time Joel Embiid fell in the game. I didn't get the final count on how many times he fell, but I'm assuming it was a lot, and they gave away a bunch of money on Underdog. They're doing these all throughout the playoffs. And then also, in addition to that, they have the pick 'em that you can have on there. A promo that they have going on right now is the James Harden for Game 7 on Sunday. So you have 2 days to do this. James Harden, 0.5 points, which even with as up and down as Harden has been in this series, will certainly score above 0.5 points, barring a Nets-Bucks-like injury. And so all you basically have one pick already. That's a shoe-in. And then you just have to hit on one other pick. I did break the streak recently with the picks, but then I got two wrong back-to-back. So I broke the streak. I got two in a row right, and now I've gotten two in a row wrong. So tonight there are games on. We have the Heat and the Knicks, and then we also have the Lakers and the Warriors. So is there anyone that you're feeling a big game from tonight, Sam?
I mean, it feels like this would – Steph's got to, like, kill them at some point. Like, I feel like Steph really had, like, a true Steph game.
Yep.
Thing. Like, he's been, like, okay. But, like, I mean, I would just take it a straight over on Steph's points as long as they're something like that.
All right, so let's pull what Steph's points are right now. Because you're right, because they've kind of turned him into more of like a playmaker instead of – it's 31.5. Their back's against the wall. It's on the road. I don't believe Steph has scored over that the entire series so far. Right now, I'll pull up his stats. He had 31 one game. He had 27, 20, 23, and 27. So this would be his high for the series, but – Steph back against the wall. Wiggins might not play, so that's another offensive guy that they're losing. Well, you know, Wiggins is a two-way player, but a guy who can get his own shot that isn't playing. If you put, let's say, $20 on this, it's a $60 payout. For one's a shoe-in, and then you just have to hit on one other pick. You can do today. You can do picks on Sunday. You can do any of that on Underdog. So use the promo code SLOP to get a $100 deposit match today. So, Sam, we did a stream last night. You came on at halftime. Celtics were up, but you were not feeling good. The Jason Tatum performance was horrendous in the first half. The Sixers looked terrible in the first quarter, but they were hanging around. They finally take the lead in the third quarter. They're holding on to it all throughout the fourth until the Sixers' own version of a diaper disaster, which is missing every open look they got. Melton missed three threes. Tucker missed multiple open threes. Embiid missed two middies that he usually makes, one rimmed in and out. Tyrese Maxey missed a step back three after having a pretty fantastic night all night. And once again, the Sixers at home in a big game that they could have closed out the series collapsed. And the Celtics forced Game 7 in Boston on Sunday. I've been losing my mind for two reasons over the past 18 hours or so since the game ended. The main one is I've been a big critic of Doc Rivers in the past. I think that In the Hawks series, he made some terrible decisions. I thought last year was kind of more bad luck. At the beginning of the year, I was fine with them firing him, all this shit. I think the majority of people have actually realized that it isn't Doc right now in this series. I think Doc has coached a fine series. I think there are certain levers that he's pulled that have worked. There are certain levers he's pulled that have not worked. Just like any other coach, he's made some adjustments throughout the series. He's done okay. He's been fine. I mean, I would say above average. The Sixers got about as good of looks with their shooters who they have relied on all year, the number one three-point shooting team in the NBA. They shot 23 or 24% at home in a closing game with the chance to win the series. And I just can't come away from this game blaming Doc Rivers. I have to think that it is a combination of the role players missing all of their open looks. Joel, while he was fantastic in the second and third quarter, once again being gassed down the stretch. And Harden, just kind of the Jekyll and Hyde game from Harden that you've gotten this entire series. One game he scores an efficient 40, almost triple-double. The next he's terrible. The next he's terrible. He's great again. He's pretty good, and they can get by with it. And then he's terrible, and pretty much all of their wins have coincided with good Harden games. All of their losses have coincided with bad Harden games. And offensively, the process was not good. The Celtics made a great adjustment by putting Robert Williams back into the starting lineup, and it threw off the Sixers from the jump. The PJ Tucker thing, for the second time in this series, did not work. And I feel as though if you are the Sixers, you just blew a golden opportunity at home in a game six when Jason Tatum was terrible for three quarters. He couldn't score, couldn't do anything. Of course, he hits a bunch of threes late, big threes to seal the win for the... This was the most Kobe game we've ever seen Tatum play.
It was literally like that finals, it was the game seven performance, like on the six, the one that won in finals MVP. I mean, I was losing my mind because I really thought the Celtics were going to like lose that game. It's funny. I've described this series as like just two teams trying to kill their fan bases. Because however you guys felt down the stretch, like when guys were missing open threes, that's how I felt when Jaylen Brown slipped on the wet spot and it led to like the 4-point swing and it like looked like he was like not gonna be okay. That's like the worst a basketball team is like, or basketball like event has made me feel. And like, I thought the game was over at that point. I was like, that's like just some sort of karmic. I don't know. That just seemed like it was a moment. Like that was going to be the end of the game. Was I think it was like in the middle of the third quarter or something like that. And the thing is about this series, what I think is like the defining thing is that both teams have had events like that two or three times a game, which I don't think I've ever seen in a series before, where like both teams are absolutely certain some sort of like a catastrophe is coming right around the corner and both teams are correct. And it's just wish catastrophe hurts, like hurts less is like what's happening.
The last three games has basically been collapses back and forth.
Yeah.
Game four, the Sixers collapse, they hang on. Game five, the Celtics collapse the entire game and just basically don't show up. The Celtics and Sixers just had the reverse thing happen to them. Game five and game six.
Yes.
Sixers on the road. All the role players play well. Embiid played a really good game. I gave him credit for that in the last game. Harden played a good game. Maxey finally showed up in this series. And they made their threes. They did what they needed to do. They controlled the game in Boston. Reverse that. Celtics go on the road. Their role players, Derek White finally starts hitting some threes. Malcolm Brogdon starts hitting some threes. Defensively, they look alive for the first time in this series. And the thing that has been driving me a little bit crazy is I have been avoiding podcasts for the most part today. I did listen very briefly to Zach Lowe and Doris Burke. And the first thing she talked about was Jason Tatum and saying, basically what I said on the stream last night was I do have respect for Jason Tatum and James Harden, because even when they're playing like doo-doo ass, they'll still continue to shoot those shots and hope that the fortunes will swing. And I was killed by my own thoughts, because later in the game, obviously Tatum starts hitting those threes. But I was losing my mind a little bit, because it was just like, one, the Tatum had the luxury to be able to do that because the role players played so well. Defensively, Rob was great. Smart really carried the team, I thought, for the first two and a half, three quarters. I felt like he was really what kind of held them in this game. The fact that they have a creator that they can fall back on like him. And then
Bill fucking went after Smart again, which I was like insane. Like
what does he have to do?
It's unclear why Bill thinks the Celtics won the game, because if it's not Marcus Smart, like who did play well enough for the Celtics to win the game?
Jaylen didn't even shoot well. Like Jaylen's been making every shot he's been taking. He even struggled last night.
Yeah. It was, again, it was like a mid-off. But sorry, I interrupted you. You were saying about...
No, but I was just saying, like, the narrative is now Jason Tatum having the Mamba mentality. And I said, telling my boss after I didn't do shit on Monday to Thursday and busted my ass on Friday, that I have Mamba mentality. Like, this idea that a player can essentially get away with it for three quarters playing so poorly, and now the narrative is, oh, that was the best 5-for-21 game or whatever, 5-for-24 game I've ever seen, and da-da-da, and blah, blah, blah. When the reality was, the Marcus Smart and the other role players did their job so well that Tatum had the luxury to be able to kind of, you know, play as poorly as he did through the first three quarters. And then in the fourth quarter, of course, he gets his shining moment, because the Sixers kind of shit all over themselves. Having said that, there are multiple players. Like, if you are the Sixers and you're looking at this, one, you blew the opportunity because their best player played that poorly. But at the same time, you shot like shit. Maxey honestly was the only one that showed up for all four quarters. Like, yes, there were chunks of the game where Joel played well. Yes, there were chunks of the game where some of the role players on the Sixers made some impact moments. George Niang specifically, by the way, who has been, in my opinion, the third or fourth best player on the Sixers in this series, a series I thought he could never even play in because of his lack of athleticism and just general limitedness to his game. He hit two big threes. He was playing good defense on Brown and Tatum. At different points, they were sending doubles to Jaylen and Tatum, and I was like, Niang's been doing well on, like, I wouldn't even do that. And defensively, Embiid has been an absolute beast in this series. But once again, if you know that Harden doesn't have it, and Tobias was terrible last night on offense, got blocked at the rim again on a layup on a fast break. I don't know how many times this has to happen before he just goes up strong with a dunk, gets blocked by Tatum at the rim. But defensively, he was good. Everyone was good defensively. Niang was good. Harden was good. Maxey was good. Embiid was good. The defense all around outside of that kind of the beginning of that first quarter was really fantastic for the Sixers all night. And what it comes down to for me is, if we get into a game seven where this is the same situation we're in, where you know Harden doesn't have it, you know that, like, I love Maxey, but he can't be your best player for four quarters. Like, he can't be the only one that shows up and is active on both ends. And you know that Tobias doesn't have it. You know the role players don't have it. If you are Joel Embiid, you need to call for the ball. He didn't touch the ball in the last 3 minutes of the game. He needs to call for the ball. He needs to take over down the stretch. MVP of the league. I know he does a lot on offense. He does a lot on defense. He's coming off an injury, so he's not in the greatest shape. But, like, this needs to be a statement game for him on Sunday, because they really let a golden opportunity slip away at home when they really should be. We should be talking about them in the Eastern Conference Finals today, in my opinion. Like, I know that they've been a kind of Jekyll and Hyde team all throughout the playoffs, but, like, this was a chance when the other team's best player was not playing well. And you can literally, if you shoot 35% from three, you are advancing to the Eastern Conference Finals, and you just can't take advantage of all the opportunities that you created last night. It drives me mad. It feels like, I feel like every time they've turned a corner, they regress a little bit. And it feels like it's kind of the same. It's this tug and pull from both sides where, like, the other team is begging them to take the series, and neither team will do it.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of feels like it kind of feels like the Sixers and the Celtics have opposite problems, because I would agree with you. I think Doc, I would go so far as to say I think Doc's actually coached a great series, to be honest.
Weird.
Like, and I think that Doc, like, I think the weakness of the Celtics is Joe Mazzulla, and, you know, the weakness of the Sixers is, you know, up and down play from the bench guys, and versus, like, the Celtics bench guys have been pretty steady. So, like, yep, that's really what the trade-off has been. It's also, I mean, Harden and Embiid have outplayed Tatum and Brown, like, so, like, completely up and down the floor. Like, especially, like, I don't know. Tatum defenders are going on and on about how Jason Tatum's been great on defense. And, yeah, he's been, like, pretty solid, been pretty good. You know who's been better on defense is Joel Embiid. So, like, I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear that, you know. Like,
the Celtics are shooting 82% at the rim when Joel's on the bench and, like, 64% when he plays. It's, like, an 18 percentage point swing. He's been incredible defensively. Like, and it's really frustrating because I feel like I've talked about this time and time again where, like, I just wish it was – I wish it was enough, because he is so good on that end that, like, the Sixers literally just need one of Maxey or Harden to carry for a little bit down the stretch of a game because Joel's gassed, and they win that game. They win multiple games in the series. Game three, like, there are times where they've had the opportunity to steal a game, and they really just can't do it. And, like, that's why I say this is Joel's moment. Like, Joel needs to – be the guy, because you can't wait around and hope that other people do it for you. If you are the best player on the team, you need to just take control, have a legacy game, have a legacy moment, get the team to the Eastern Conference Finals, because there's been no other MVP in the history of the league that hasn't been to the Eastern Conference Finals or a conference finals in general. So he needs to kind of just realize that if things aren't going in the right direction, he needs to kind of step it up.
I feel like we were having these discussions last year when Celtics-Bucks Game 7 happened, but is this, like, the most, like, impactful just in terms of, like, what it's going to do to a conference for, like, 3 years, like, game, like, semifinals, conference semifinals game ever? Like,
Okay, I don't know. I'm kind of conflicted on this. I kind of think, and I know, maybe it's just my fan brain, I kind of think that, yes, it's a huge game for the Sixers. It's, like, the biggest game that we've had. Yesterday was the biggest game since 2001. Yeah, yeah. No, yesterday was the biggest game since 2001.
Yeah.
Sunday is also the biggest game. Now the other biggest game since 2001.
Yeah.
It will define what happens to the future of this team, whether it is Harden leaving, Doc being fired, Joel either staying here, requesting a trade, whatever. I kind of think from the Celtics perspective, it's not as big a deal. And this is why. One, you have a scapegoat already built in, which is Joe Mazzulla. Like, let me ask you, what did you make of Horford? And did you see Horford and Smart's comments after the game?
Yeah. I mean, it's just clear. They're just being honest, because that's clearly what's fucking happening. If you watch.
So if you missed it, they basically both were like, yeah, it's about fucking time that he made this change to the lineup. Like, we've wanted him to make this change to the lineup, essentially. And that Smart was essentially talking about him like he was like a kid. He was like, oh, I'm glad that he's finally learning. And I was like, this is your coach? Like, he's like he's younger than Al Horford. Like, yeah. I really think that the respect thing is the one thing that, like, people have bitched about Mazzulla, and, like, he's done some good things, some bad things in this series. But, like, the respect thing is the most important thing to me. I really just don't believe that they respect him in the same way that they respected Udoka and even Stevens before that.
Absolutely. I mean, like part of this, you know, like, again, like, Joe Mazzulla inherited, like, a really bad situation just because, like, I mean, people, that's going to sound insane to people. It's like, what do you mean? He walked into, like, one of the most talented teams, like, in, like, the last, like, 10 years. But He had no assistant coaches. Like, he has no assistant coaches, like, whatsoever. Like, he's, like, literally just, like, a decision maker. And, like, that's got to be, like, really fucking hard. And I think that's why, you know, I think that's kind of what's happening here with some of this stuff, is the Celtics are having to have guys like Smart and Horford like figure this stuff out like on the fly. And I don't know. So here's what I would say to that. Because I agree, because like after game five, when people, Zach was doing this, when some of the people were like ramping up the discourse thing of like, you know, they were comparing it to the Bucks losing in five to the Heat in round one of the Celtics.
Which makes no sense. It's completely different situations.
Well, and that's kind of what I was thinking. But like at the same time, I do think, you know, there is this pressure that doesn't really make sense, but also is there, that even though this team has been so successful, that there is something fucked up and stale about it that like needs a change. And the fact that this is coming right when Jaylen Brown is due for a supermax and there's a hard cap. And like, I think there's no question they should absolutely like give Jaylen Brown the supermax and figure it out later. Like
they're going to, they can now, so they will.
Well, but I don't, if you lose game six, I guess I'm not as sure they would do that, because I think quietly we have very cheap owners too, because
That is true.
So this team is going to be going somewhere. And I think that if they let Jaylen Brown go, that would be a Jalen Brunson style fucking mistake that could have knock on down effects and could really, you know, they wouldn't like be like they would actually be the, you know, Mavs, but it could take them down a level. And once you go down a level, you need luck in the playoffs. And that would be kind of the end of the Celtics as legitimate title contenders for like four.
Wait, you're telling me a Boston sports team might be cheap and trade a young star?
Yeah, that would never happen. Also, it would never tell you that a Boston sports team would that would be heavily favored would blow it.
No, not recent history would not tell you that, especially one that's, you know, breaking records and stuff. But first, the reason why I don't think this is as much pressure for the Celtics, even though it might be self-made pressure, it might be like their own expectations because of the success that they had pretty early on in the careers of these guys. And kind of the situation that they were put into where, like, even from the jump, they were good as role players on good teams. That it might create a level of expectation where you get to the conference finals or it's a failure kind of thing. But they're still both young. They both can get paid. And like you said, you probably just figure it out later. Like, I don't know. I just, even with Jaylen Brown's up and down play and, like, holes in his game, I still think that there is a... If you're a two-way wing who can defend on ball and shoot and create your own shot, do all the things that Jaylen does, there's always going to be a market for that guy in the modern NBA. And if you re-sign him to that contract, maybe you're not getting the full max return on a trade if you are to trade him later, but you're still going to get like a good return for that player, whether you're getting a star who you view as better. If you're waiting around to see who the next guy that becomes available is and you can build a package around Jaylen to put with Jason Tatum, or you are kind of like, I kind of look at it like if Jaylen, the only way that this changes is if Jaylen says, you know what, I kind of want to go to my own team and have my own thing, like Jaylen Brunson did. But you have the luxury of having a year to find someone in somewhere to trade him and get back something good. Like, you're not going to get nothing for him, and it's not going to end the window in the same way that the Sixers have their best player who has never been to a conference finals with the core of this team that has never been to the conference finals with a coach that hasn't been to the conference finals in 10 years with Harden on his way out the door in free agency. And the only upside that you really have if Harden leaves is if Maxey takes a star leap, which I think he will at some point, but I don't think that it's going to be in the squared up with the prime years of Joel Embiid's career. And that's where it gets more complicated, where Joel starts to look around and go, what am I doing here? And if you have an MVP who's saying that, then that's where you really need to start to look inward. So this game is, for me, is bigger than this, is way bigger for the Sixers than it is for the Celtics, because I think the Celtics have a little bit more flexibility and optionality with where they can go. They have all their own picks. They have tradable salaries. Even if they want to get a third guy that might fit a little bit better with those two, or you could trade Jaylen, or you could re-sign. Like, you have so many options. Whereas the Sixers are like, we got to hope to keep Joel happy and get a guy somewhere else, or build the roster around him and Maxey and just hope it's good enough.
I mean, let me be clear. Like, definitely, it's definitely bigger for the Sixers. Also, like, the James Harden, like, threat is, like, a like, other thing here. And there's a bunch of stuff. But I just mean in terms of, like, both teams have, like, it's going to be nasty for both of these teams if they lose this game. You know what I mean? Like,
our fans will be fucking jumping off buildings. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and but I guess what I'm saying is, like, we're talking about the two best teams in the Eastern Conference. I mean, I know the Bucks are around, but, like, I really think the Bucks, I think people are going to be surprised with, like, what happens with the Bucks. I'm just like, I'm not.
The Bucks are Giannis merchants. Like in the same way that the Sixers have been Embiid merchants for years, the Bucks are Giannis merchants.
I think we're looking at, going forward, the two best teams in the Eastern Conference for the next, like, two or three years. I think in the case of the Sixers, that's as long as PJ Tucker can hold up and if Harden comes back, you know. And, like, I think that there's a, you know, there's a real chance for one of these teams to not destroy the other, but really weaken the other one.
Yes.
Winning this game. You know what I'm saying? Like, if the Sixers were to win this game, I think that they could, I think there's a little bit of breathing room opens up on the other end, unless Harden did the Kawhi thing after you guys, like, win the title or something like that. Like, you know
what I'm saying? I would be fine with. I've talked about it with people, and I'm like, I know it sounds insane to think that, but like, you did your job. You came here. If they get to the finals, they win the finals. You did your job. And then two, more importantly to me, I actually think it's not the worst thing in the world, because I just don't know how much longer you're even going to get the game one and game four version of James Harden. Like, I'm seeing it with Chris Paul now, where I'm like, man, Phoenix is kind of fucked because they let the Chris Paul thing go on too long. And, like, they had traded him a year ago. Not that you should just trade your guys the second they decline, but, like, if they had traded him a year ago, they probably could have got positive value, or they could have got cap space or whatever. And now you're looking at a situation where, like, you basically just have to dump his contract this offseason and hope that you can get something back for it. Like, if they win the title or get to the finals and Harden wants to come back and it's not, like, a 5-year max or a 4-year max or whatever they can offer him, I'd certainly be open to it. But, like, I'm not going to cripple the like, if you won the title, I don't think you should cripple the franchise and the next few years just to appease the player who helped you get that championship. Like, I what I'm trying to say here is, I think that Harden's best years are behind him no matter what. And, like, Game 7 will prove to me whether, like, he is, like, if this is sustainable or not. Because the up and downness of it is just like, man, this is what happens just before guys fall off a cliff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's scary. And, like, look, if he wins the title, I probably won't give a fuck. But, like right now, sitting in this situation, like, I do have a little bit of skepticism. But then again, he won us Game 1 and Game 4. So, like, we wouldn't even be in this situation if he weren't on the team. So
can I make the case here? Because I've looked at this every which way, and there's two things that this comes down to when I've been trying to, like, glean out what's going to happen tomorrow, okay? Mm-hmm. But I think Sixers fans are in a pretty dire place right now, much like Celtics fans were in a pretty dire place after Game 5.
It's every game back and forth now.
Yes. So I think if you look at how this is lining up, this is sort of turning into a storybook, like, lineup for the Sixers. It is, like, a storybook lineup, though. Like, if you guys were to beat the Celtics in crippling fashion, in just devastating fashion like this, then go to the Miami Heat, stomp them in, like, 4. You know what I'm saying? Exercise those demons on the way through.
I also do think that will happen to whoever wins this series. I've determined, I think they're just going to kick the shit out of the Heat, and everyone's going to be like, oh, the Heat weren't really that good.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with that. Well, actually, you know what, though? I think the Celtics are more vulnerable just because you've got the Spo-Mazzulla coaching disadvantage.
That's a good point, yeah.
Anything is possible at that point. But then, you know, and it really seems like the Nuggets are going to come out of the West now. And, you know, Jokic, Embiid, final, like, that would be like the basketball hipster fucking lineup. But I think that would be genuinely like one of the like best finals in like a long time if that like were to happen. So
the narratives would be great. I kind of, it's weird. The more I watch this, the more I go, first off, I know you're worried about that, but I think the Celtics are just going to run through. Like the Heat, watching them, and I know that Jim, I don't know if Jimmy's 100% right now. I think the ankle is like, it's a thing. Like, right. And I've been watching, and when they played the Knicks in the last two games, like if he's not cooking, like they don't have the offense necessary to win a series against a really good team like that has like a two-way potential like the Sixers or the Celtics. And I kind of think, and I've been talking about it with a few people, I kind of think the Sixers actually are the one team that might be able to take out the Nuggets. I'm not sure how I feel about the Celtics against the Nuggets. Now, I would feel differently about this if the Nuggets... So the one thing that Jokic has always been vulnerable to defensively has been guys that can pull up from three. Steph, Dame, whoever in the playoffs. Any center is going to struggle with that. But Jokic specifically has had some issues with that in the past defensively. I don't know if it would be enough to match how good Denver's offense is going to be against pretty much no matter like anyone. But Tatum's three-point shot, I know he hit a few threes catch and shoots at the end of yesterday mostly, I think. Maybe he had some pull-ups, I can't remember. But his pull-up three kind of falling off a cliff might change the math on how I kind of feel about that series. Because I feel like if Tatum's shot didn't regress this year, and maybe it's due to the muscle, maybe it's due to randomness, maybe there's something wrong with the shot and they need to fix it in the offseason or whatever. But like if Tatum's shot didn't fall off right now, he would be insane. Because he's gotten better at everything else. It's just the shot regressing that has been really what put him in this position where he's having these stinker games because he just can't hit a fucking shot. But long story short here, what I'm trying to say is like, I feel like if the Sixers can get out of here, it's their best shot. I think they would beat the Heat. I think they have a good shot against the Nuggets. And I think that, I feel like with the Celtics, I'm not sure. I feel very good about them against the Heat. And also, who knows, maybe the Nuggets get upset. I don't think that's going to happen. But maybe the Nuggets get upset and the Celtics get a more favorable matchup in the finals. But like, what I'm trying to say here is like, this could set up for the second straight year where the Celtics look like the shoe-in for the championship and they get to the finals and then they just get beat by an all-time performance from Steph last year and Jokic this year. Because Jokic has been the best player in the playoffs.
Yeah, but also like, I mean, yes. And like you have to beat who's in front of you, but like it's also been like the Wolves and like a Suns team we all looked at and went, ooh. You know, like
we felt bad about them pretty instantly for sure. But like I kind of just think that we're underestimating how good Jokic has really been though. Like they get a good shot on every single possession because of him.
It's so hard for me in the West because I have like no idea. I still don't know what's going on in the Warriors. I have no idea in the West, and I think, like the bottom line here is like I just have no idea what to make of like, and without that, I have no idea how strong or unstrong like the Nuggets are. Like I'm pretty sure the Sixers are like a very good team. I know there is a dominance to the. I actually think the Warriors would be a worse matchup for the Celtics just because of the psychic damage. Like, sure. I think Celtics' like biggest weakness is their own like psychic damage. You know, like so. I don't know. I mean, I guess what I'm saying is in this game, I think the Celtics are 9-11 in their last. They're 9-10 or 9-11 in their last 20.
It's about to be 9-11.
Yeah. Should be.
Yeah. Sunday's 9/11, baby.
Yeah, I was gonna say, whenever you have 9/11 at your home country, it's usually very bad for your home. Let me just put it that way. So, you know, like, this is not a shoe. You know what I'm saying? Like, I actually felt better about Game 6 yesterday. I was actually a little alarmed at how close Game 6 was, to be honest. I really thought the Celtics were going to stomp.
The prophecy is kind of dead now. Like, I was going to say, the prophecy, that was the furthest off the prophecy's been so far. You called a Celtics get-right game where they crush them and end or whatever, but It certainly was. It was way closer than I kind of felt like the Celtics were going to win going into yesterday, despite the fact that the Sixers had this golden opportunity. But the way that the Sixers lost is the only reason that I'm discouraging going into Game 7. Because if you won that game and it was like a runaway victory and whatever, the fact that they fought back is a good thing. But the fact that some of their demons from before, which is that fourth quarter offense that they've struggled with 2 years ago, I know it's a different team, but 2 years ago, 3 years ago, like those years were really what sunk those teams. And the fact that that is the case is the only thing that kind of spooked me about that game. But at the same time, every game's different. They got crushed in game two and then they won game four and five. So like, it's not to say that the Sixers don't have a chance. I think it's going to go down to the wire. I think it's going to give us both heart attacks. I think it's going to be really tough. But right now, I'm out of the prediction business for now with this series. Yeah, I'm kind of throwing caution to the wind. I don't know. I have no idea. The Sixers could come out and smack them in the face like they did in Game 5. The Celtics could come out and smack them in the face like they did in Game 2. And I would be I can't be surprised with whatever outcome happens on Sunday.
There will be at no point, no matter what happens, will I feel good about what's going on in the basketball court until like 4 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. Like literally, no matter what happens, the Celtics could be up by 12. I can see that as a bad omen. The Celtics could be down by 12. I can see that as a bad omen. You know, I really do think there's a little bit of a home court disadvantage in this series just because of the demons of both.
Yes.
Fan bases, like when things start going wrong, both
fans feel it.
Yes. They're both like muttering under their breath and the building gets quiet. And Bill talks about this all the time. I think that really does like fuck with the players. And I think that's kind of what happened to the Sixers a little bit down the stretch of, you know, game six yesterday was that everyone was like, Jesus Christ, is this going to happen again? And then it like kind of becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Happened to the Celtics in game five, where it's like, these fucking bozos really going to do this again. And guess what? They did do it again. So, I mean, I don't know. I think that there is something a little freeing about playing on the road. Like
you can see it. They play both teams play looser on the road. It is very weird that like both of these teams struggle in front of their home fans. It's the only the Nuggets don't. I mean, the Nuggets have the altitude thing, but like the Nuggets are fucking bulletproof at home, dude. Like they've been incredible playing their games at home, and like the Sixers and the Celtics just have not had that same advantage, but. This is going to be the end of the free portion. We're going on almost 40 minutes here. We're going to riff on some other stuff, the other series that are happening right now, maybe some adjustments that the teams could make heading into game 7 in Boston on Sunday, what the Suns are going to do moving forward, because that's a weird situation. And, can the Warriors and Heat keep getting away with it? So if you want to hear the rest of this episode, subscribe to the You Know Ball Patreon. We also did another episode after Game 5 the other day, so check that out as well. Link is in the description.